You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleene, both right for Bright Side of the Sun. We're joining you right after the Suns lost 109-105 in Milwaukee, right after the Bucks fired Jason Kidd, which is the least of their worries right now after they won. But what's your thoughts, initial thoughts after the Suns lost? Because to me, I think it was all about, even though Greg Monroe had a good game offensively, he got the start in his return to Milwaukee. He had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, but he also had 5 turnovers and he really couldn't guard the paint like he normally can, like Tyson Chandler could. So I think that's the main takeaway. And also, Devin Booker was struggling mightily against Malcolm Brogdon. He was only 2 of 14, but he still did have 14 points, 8 assists, and 4 rebounds in 36 minutes. But Brogdon had a career high of 32 points plus 16 on 11 of 14 shots. He was a menace on both sides of the court tonight. So what was your takeaways from tonight's game?
My takeaways, or my biggest one, is just the inability of the Suns defenders, especially on the perimeter, to contain ball handlers. It's been a problem all year. I think today the problem became a ripple effect of they didn't have anybody who could stop Brogdon or Bledsoe from getting into the paint. Those guys got hot and then kind of rippled down as help that offensive players, Tyler Ulis, they were not having anywhere near the night that they would have wanted to have on offense, so they couldn't, you know, guys were just unplayable. Ulis, even Cannon, didn't have a really strong night offensively. Jackson struggled as well, so Triano was put in a bind and ended up with some really odd mismatches, having guys like down the stretch we saw Isaiah Cannon on Chris Middleton for those two game ceiling step back post shots, and I think you just kind of saw it really exposed the Suns, a big weakness for them right now, which is perimeter defense, and they don't really have much help on the roster as far as that goes right now. So you know, it's really just a matchup thing that Milwaukee was able to expose, but it kind of points to a larger problem, I think.
Just a quick question related to those possessions with Middleton. I was bringing it up to myself while watching it. Why wasn't Warren and Troy Daniels helping Isaiah Cannon on those two possessions? I feel like they were both on Bledsoe, who's not a three-point shooter. I feel like they could have easily helped on Cannon there, because I know those two shots were the ice of the game for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I didn't – that was an odd thing. I was actually hoping to go back at some point over the next couple of days and just watch the highlights of those last two plays. I'm sure they'll be up quickly and try to even understand why Cannon specifically. I mean, like I said, there was problems with other guys, but just based on who was on the court, was by at that point it was Cannon, but Booker and Daniels and Warren, if I'm not mistaken, and anyone else besides Cannon would have been a better option there. So, I mean, I understand Milwaukee has some interesting problems that they present just because all of their guys are long and most of them can pass well, but, you know, you're not terrified of any, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe was 0 of 2 from 3. Like you said, he's not a fearsome guy that you can't possibly leave when Middleton's about to score his 34th and 35th points of the game. You can help off Bledsoe in that situation, and I don't even know, like I said, why Cannon was in that position in the first place, one-on-one on Middleton. But I mean, it's also obviously not just that one play. One other thing too, takeaway wise, just big picture from this game, is if they hadn't turned the ball over 21 times, they probably win easily. They were able to keep it close despite, especially even in the fourth quarter, just throwing the ball away. And so, you know, those Middleton plays were puzzling, but not the biggest problem, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree there. I think it was definitely the turnovers were the main issue for the Suns tonight. They finished with 21 turnovers, and I think the Bucks scored, I believe it was around 25 points. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I believe it was that or above 25. So this is a big occurrence, obviously, with a young team like the Suns, and it's been an issue with the Suns all year, but Just your quick thoughts on just the turnover problems the Suns always used to run into, and just what do you think it is? Because I feel like it's just usually just basic issues with them.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of the younger players, Josh Jackson didn't actually have any today, but it's actually not really that, I guess, now looking kind of at the box score. Ulis had two, Bender had two. Those aren't really high. The two highest guys were just the people who handled the ball most tonight, which were Monroe and Booker. And a big example, and you know, Booker has had those problems with turnovers throughout the season. We've talked about that plenty, but I just think tonight specifically the new wrinkle we kind of saw was what can happen. A long team like the Bucks is able to devote so much attention to Booker in clutch situations. There was that pick and roll that they tried to run on the left wing in the game, I think with under a minute left, and Booker got swallowed up. I think it was John Henson, or I actually don't remember who it was, that stole the ball away from him and they got a layup out of it. So when there's nobody else, Warren had a solid game, but and you know, if he's behind the arc in that sort of situation, teams can even gamble off of him a little bit. So you continue to see the problem when Booker's the only devastating, like, multiple skilled offensive player on the floor. That happens. I mean, there's no other choice. It happens all the time for the Suns.
Yeah, and we saw tonight he was 2 of 14, as mentioned. And real quick on Malcolm Brogdon, who had a career high and was 11 of 14 and really filled the statue defensively like he always does. I know there's rumors about Bledsoe, and he obviously got traded to Milwaukee, but Brogdon was a guy that was talked about as one of the main pieces there. And just real quickly on just the thought of Brogdon alongside Booker, just a guy like that, is that like the kind of guy you're looking for next to Booker? Because I feel like if you put Brogdon right now next to Booker, it really opens up a lot for him as far as conserving energy.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the kind of player that I mean. Like, just people who can, players who can do multiple things. I think that's a quiet problem for the Suns is, you know, it's not as simple as shooting because, you know, tonight Troy Daniels is on fire, especially in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Dragan Bender can hit threes. Jared Dudley played quite a bit tonight, and he's obviously a capable shooter from distance. So it's not as simple sometimes as just saying that there's no shooters around Booker, because what happens if in that situation on the left wing when he got double teamed off the screen, you know, he can get the ball to a shooter. He wasn't able to on that particular play, but you know, he can get it to somebody like Daniels most of the time. He's in those situations. But what if Tim recovers to Daniels? Now Daniels isn't really somebody who can attack closeouts or make that quick pass himself with the requisite vision to do that. So it's more of a like multi-skilled player's problem than just like a shooter's problem, I think.
Yeah, and we're going to touch real quick on Dragan Bender. We're going to move on to Dragan. He played 28 minutes. He was 3 of 4, had 3 rebounds, 2 assists. But one thing I wanted to touch on with him was his assertiveness or lack thereof tonight. He seemed hesitant a lot of times as far as going to the rim. He laid it up and tried a really awkward layup instead of just dunking it against the air. So just what's your thoughts as far as Bender's process, as far as assertiveness goes offensively?
He did have a dunk in transition. That was fun to see, I guess.
That was the first time we've seen Dragan dunk, I mean, in a while, right? Or been a while.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I don't remember the last time. I'm sure he has, but there's really no dunkers on this team, though, except for Jackson. Like, it's always a big deal when Booker dunks, and Warren is just so crafty. He always goes for the layup instead. It's like Jackson or nobody, really. But, with Bender, I just think that we have to accept that at this point. To me, it's like the progress as being willing to drive and attack those closeouts when they come. You know, the first step for him was being confident taking the open three. Now, I think he's kind of building on that, and he's comfortable making the decision whether to shoot or to drive, and he's driving more when that lane is open. But he's still, you know, now maybe the last final step will be to actually shoot when he gets in close, because right now he's not even looking up a lot of the time. He's looking to pass. There was one play where he drove to the hoop and Booker was cutting, but it wasn't really a good angle. The buck under the rim kind of closed off Booker, forced him to the baseline. There wasn't really an open pass where he was going to be able to shoot, so he kind of stopped and was actually going to float back out to the three-point line. Bender hit him right as he was kind of backpedaling to go back to the corner, and it just was a turnover. You see that a lot with Bender, where the communication is not there because the better play is for him to shoot the ball, but he's not doing it, and so then he just ends up turning the ball over.
Yeah, that's going to be really something to follow moving forward, because we saw Marquise Chriss had a second MRI, and it revealed no further damage, but obviously the rehab's taken for longer than expected, so he'll be in the lineup as far as starting a little while longer. But another guy I want to touch on is Jared Dudley, who had his best game of the year as a Sun so far, I think. It was, even though he only had 5 points, he had 9 assists. I think he probably should have had around 11 or 12. Guys could have finished some baskets for him. 2 steals, 3 rebounds, 2 of 2, 17 minutes total for Dudley. So for a guy like Dudley, as far as the minutes goes, and especially with Jackson after what happened with him in the second quarter with his fouls and what happened with the refs and all that, but what's your thoughts as far as Dudley and his importance on this roster? Because I feel like it really showed tonight just how valuable he can be.
Yeah, I think in the fourth quarter, there was a few possessions right before he got taken out and replaced with Bender for the remainder, like 6 minutes of the game. I think he was overpassing. I think in those situations, the Suns have shown that they're best in most fourth quarter situations when Booker, the ball in his hands. Of course, Milwaukee was making it hard for this place to work, like we talked about with the turnovers, but he was being a little bit too pass happy there. I think that contributed, and he turned the ball over twice. I think both of his turnovers came in the fourth quarter, but overall, it's so obvious when he's on the court how much better it is. Again, I think that he's another good example of a forward, of a bigger player who can do multiple things, kind of like Brogdon, just players who can make the right decision, shoot, pass, drive. It makes things so much easier. And I would just, one note with Dudley too, is like, I wonder what happens when Chris does come back. And to just one more add on that is Scott Bordeaux of the Republic did tweet a video of Chris warming up during pregame shoot-around. So he is at least getting back on the court in whatever way he can, and so I think it's progress. We'll see. Kind of, there still isn't really a timeline, but I'd just be interested to see if Dudley plays still around this much once Chris comes back and the minutes, and sort of just how it falls back in line. Because on one hand, you could think that they're building up his trade value, and he has been playing well enough where he's looking a lot better if you're another team scouting that, but on the other hand, maybe it's just really an injury thing, and when Chris comes back, it goes back to normal. But he helps the team when he's out there.
We've touched on a lot of guys in the bench unit so far, but in total they finished with 42 points. Just what's your final thoughts from the bench tonight? Because I know they really helped them. Definitely Troy Daniels helped them as far as getting that game competitive late.
Yeah, Daniels was a big difference. I think Cannon and Daniels, if they don't have the kinds of performances that they had today, probably a pretty lopsided loss. You saw what happened in the fourth quarter when those guys were really a big factor. Cannon hit an and-one layup. Daniels hit, I think, 2 or 3 three-pointers in the fourth quarter. When Booker wasn't on today, they were the ones who stepped up, which it's kind of getting back to the recipe for success that the Suns had in some of their bigger wins in December, where the bench is really stepping up. It's like Booker, Warren, and the bench, and the other starters are just a little bit more of a fluctuation there. Monroe had a good game today. We probably shouldn't forget that. He was pretty solid and got the Suns some interior buckets when they needed them, but not in performance, I don't think. Obviously, they lost. So that's been a trend when he plays.
Yeah, and for this loss today, the Suns now dropped to 17-30. I haven't checked tankathon.com yet to check the updated standings, but I think they definitely have to be at least top six right now, maybe seventh at worst. But what's your thoughts on their stretch coming up? We've touched on a little bit on a couple podcasts ago, but I think right now I'm pulling up the Suns schedule at this moment, and I think they play the Pacers, And then they play at the Knicks, maybe? It's a home against the Knicks. I know they have a tough stretch coming up anyways, but in totality, what do you think about these games, these tough stretches coming up for the Suns, and just how it helps as far as the lottery goes? Because these types of losses are the types of ones that we talked about at the beginning of the season. Like, competitive losses are really the prototypical ones you're looking for.
Yeah, I think it's at Indiana, home against New York, and then home against Dallas on Sunday, if I'm remembering correctly. And then just for reference, I usually use 538's Carmelo projections. It just runs every game through basically team would win, you know, based on what their players do night to night, and then runs the whole season through that and projects who wins each game. And then it projects the Suns right now finishing with a 28-54 record, so they would go 11-24 the rest of the way, and that would leave them, according to today's forecast from 538, with the third best record, or third worst record, third best lottery odds in the league. So getting a little bit better in the lottery rankings after these games, and I would assume Indiana is going to be another tough one. They really struggled against them at home, and now they're on the road with an earlier game that West Coast teams typically don't. The weekend will be interesting, though. I think New York and Dallas are both winnable, and they're both at home. It'll just be a matter of, you know, both of those teams have players that can get hot in a hurry, just like we've seen the Suns struggle against, you know, Kristaps and Dennis Smith Jr. both can fill it up, and so they're going to need the defense to play a lot better than they did tonight if they're going to keep winning.
Another point from tonight's game was the point guard situation. We saw Cannon play 28 minutes, Ulis played only 18 minutes, but Booker, that last 6 or 7 minutes, did run point guard like we've been seeing since he's returned. But what's your overall thoughts as far as the point guard situation goes for the Suns? Because I know, really, right now, Ulis might be going more towards the third point guard if they want to really have Cannon. I think Cannon alongside Booker is working a lot better at the moment. But do you think the Suns should make a move for just like maybe a veteran stopgap point guard at the deadline just to help Booker out at some point? Because I feel like we saw it in the last 2 minutes there. Just Milwaukee was locking down Booker, and they were forcing guys like Warren and Troy Daniels to shoot from 30 feet to try to beat him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like, I think there's a chance that a more appealing deal comes up as the deadline gets closer and teams are more willing to do trades and get off of guys that they may have liked the performances of earlier in the year. But to me, it's like if the Suns had diagnosed point guard as a problem, which, you know, anyone could have pointed out for a while now, then there's no reason that they wouldn't have already done a deal. So I'm more disinclined to think that they're okay with it. And to me, if there was to be, you know, tonight's an easy night to say this. Daniels had a little bit of a cold streak earlier in January, but I wonder why you don't just start Daniels and have that lineup just start games for you. It would make the starting lineup's life a little bit easier because, you know, we're not seeing that spacing when Tyler Ulis is in the game. He is not a good shooter from distance, really hasn't been that this year really at all. And tonight he didn't even attempt a shot. It's just been looking worse and worse from him. So, you know, I've been hopeful that Davon Reed can make an impact, but he is still slowly returning, and I don't know when we start to see him really make a difference in the rotation. But, you know, I'm sure you're on board. You've been plugging that for a while now. Just, I wonder why not just start the best lineup. Start the lineup that you like the best, the one that's closing games for you. Why don't you just maximize the amount of time it's on the court? That's sort of where I'm starting to go with it.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because looking at the advanced numbers, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but the two-man offensive ratings are still really favoring Booker and Daniels as far as backcourts go for any Suns combination by a pretty big margin, I believe. But it could be a lot closer from the last time I checked, but I'm in agreement with you, Brennan. I believe they really should consider doing the point book lineup a lot more often, at least outside closing situations. We didn't see it much as we did against Denver, but because of Brogdon's defensive performance. But what's your overall expectations? Because you brought up with Ulis there. He didn't attempt a single shot tonight. And we've really talked a lot on this podcast this year about the regression as far as the rookie season from Ulis and to the sophomore season of Ulis. So what's your thoughts on if Ulis stays this way and possibly saying he might go to the bench maybe a few weeks down the line if this continues. What do the Suns do with Tyler Ulis moving forward?
That is a good question. I think that you would probably just, because I don't think he is a useless player by any means. I think if a coach like Triano, who's comfortable playing sometimes more than 10 guys, kind of like a lot of coaches are starting to do in the league, even having nights where players aren't in the rotation and then, you know, come back in, I think if Ulis was in a much smaller role, you would probably start to see his performance pick up where he does have the ball in his hands. I think he's being really miscast, even especially now at this point in the season when he's playing off ball and Booker has the ball in his hands. Makes no sense to me. Ulis is, if he's going to be effective at all, that's not nearly the way you'd like him in. You'd like him to be controlling the ball, running pick and roll, playing defense, being able to focus on defense. Not what he's doing, really none of what he's doing right now. So I do think maybe even something as simple as if Can were to start, that might make Ulis a little bit more useful. But after this season, I don't really know, because the Suns seem pretty content with trying Brandon Knight again in the point guard spot and running with that a little bit more, seeing what that can do for them. Maybe, I don't know how it would look, but whatever form it takes, that's a guy who's going to be playing 30 minutes a game when he's fully healthy. And you have another draft pick coming and other guys who could use the ball in their hands a little bit more. So it just doesn't seem like there's really a bright future like there might have been when it looked like that he would just be Eric Bledsoe's backup heading into the year. So it's been a big change, and I maybe at this point it's just something another team might, you know, be able to unlock, because the Suns have given him plenty of opportunities and it really just hasn't worked out.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the Bucks game tonight, so we're going to move on a little bit to these discussions that have been popped up in my head a little bit, and we're going to also discuss the Woj report about Kawhi Leonard a little later on. But you brought up there as far as the point guard situation goes, and with that being said, with Brandon Knight and looking ahead, we've talked with James Jones exclusively with Brightside Knight, and we've talked with Ryan McDonough a couple times as far as press conferences go. Do you feel like, I mean, maybe I'm reading this wrong as far as the tea leaves go, but do you feel like the Suns are content as far as, man, I hope we get like a top three, top five pick, maybe get Trae Young or Sexton or Luka Doncic. And if unfortunately we aren't able to get one of those three guys, we're content with just Brandon Knight next year. Am I reading that wrong? Or do you feel like that's maybe the plan that they have in place? Maybe hopefully get that top five pick.
I think so. I mean, I think if they don't have a path to getting a ball handler that they like in the draft, then it seems like they're more than happy. And they might even roll with Knight as the starter, even if they were to get Trae Young or a Colin Sexton or a Luka Doncic, they might have those guys be competing with Knight and have Knight really enter camp as the starter. They still continue to speak really highly of Knight every opportunity that they get, and I think it's puzzling to a lot of the media just based on his mostly poor performance as a Sun and just the disappointing, and, you know, it's, I'm sure fans are rolling their eyes thinking of that just because of the ridiculousness of his injury, just how kind of fitting it is that a guy who's going into most kind of like a make or break season for him would injure himself in a pro-am game across the country, just kind of cherry on top of that bad situation. But internally, it seems like the Suns are pretty open to having him play a big role next year.
Yeah, I mean, that really is confusing to me, because I know they were really non-committal with Knight, it seemed, up until Summer League, but then all of a sudden the tune sort of changed from then, so I don't really know what's going on as far as that goes. And with Knight, I know we really haven't touched on Brandon Knight at all on this podcast because he's been hurt, but what's your thoughts on Knight next to Booker next season? Because I feel like we're definitely going to be seeing that a lot as the Suns try to build up his trade value, or maybe even at this point, even just let those 2 years ride out.
I think he fits the mold a little bit, right? I mean, he's not terribly different than somebody like a Malcolm Brogdon. I think he's not as impactful a defender, or hasn't been in his career. The thing to remember with Knight is that, you know, aside from not even just considering that he's been somewhat disappointing as a Sun, considering what they gave up to get him and that the situation that went on with that, but even before he was a Buck, when he was with the Pistons after being drafted, he wasn't really successful there, and they gave up on him. He had about 1.5, 2 seasons in Milwaukee where he was an all-star level player, and that was who the Suns bought into, but he hasn't really been that aside from those couple of seasons, and so it's kind of hard for me to say really what he would look like, because he's been so in such a different situation everywhere he's gone and played a really different role, even in Phoenix from season to season. So, remember last October, Suns fans will remember that Earl Watson was campaigning for Brandon Knight to be the sixth man of the year after they traded their number one asset to get him. It's been a whirlwind with Brandon Knight, and I don't know how it ends up, but purely fit-wise, I don't think he's too far away from, if he's at his best, what you'd want to pair next to Booker. So, I guess I see it a little bit from that aspect, but it's just hard for me to really take it seriously, considering we've never seen it.
Yeah, the point guard situation with the Suns has taken a really weird turn since I've been here since the summer. We started off with Eric Bledsoe being a really good fit alongside Booker. Then we went to Bledsoe saying, I don't want to be here. Now we're with Tyler Ulis. Then the Isaiah Cannon experience, then the Brandon Knight experience is going to happen next fall probably. So it's really a really, really weird situation the Suns are in as far as that goes, because I feel like they thought the point guard situation was going to be one of their better spots in the roster with Bledsoe, but now it's all up in the air moving forward. So I wanted to touch real quick on the Adrian Wojnarowski story he reported today with Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs. I think it's really relatable with the Suns and their current asset situation, because I feel like McDonough is holding those assets for that superstar that wants out of his next contract. And I feel like Kawhi could be that guy if this continues over the next couple of years. So I know we were texting back and forth about you. You were not so optimistic about Kawhi in this situation, but just what's your thoughts on this report from Woj today, and how'd you read into it?
I was thinking about it later on in the day, trying to like make sense really of what you can actually take away from it, because the reporting is it's not vague, but it's truthful. It seems like it's the reporters are saying what they know, which at this point is very little. Just simply seems like the recovery process that Leonard went through hasn't been as rosy as the franchise or Leonard would have hoped. Basically, he's been a little bit distant, frustrated, and the team is kind of reacting the same way. The recovery just hasn't gone according to plan. They point to the fact that Tony Parker suffered a similar injury, what was expected to be a worse version of a similar injury, and he's already back. And Leonard has not really returned. He injured a shoulder after coming back from Achilles injury, I think, or quadriceps. I don't remember exactly. And then now re-injured that first injury and is back out indefinitely. But I just think it's hard to really take from that he's going to be available or that situation is irreparable by any means. Just I have no way to assume that something like that would ever go on in San Antonio. They've given up, it's just like the one place in the league where that bad stuff never seems to happen. So it would take a lot more problem for me to really think that there's a potential for a change there.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there, but as you guys all know, listen to this podcast, I love going down my hypothetical trails and these rabbit holes just as far as future down the road timelines with the Suns, because the assets they have setting up are really for moves 1 or 2 years down the line. So it's kind of fun to think about those possibilities. And with Kawhi Leonard, he is a free agent in 2019, and his contract will be up not this summer, but the following summer. And let's just say hypothetically that this relationship does sour a little bit and it turns into a situation where Kawhi, if he does want out, maybe not possibly in a trade, but if they think he's not going to come back, maybe the Spurs want to deal him at next year's trade deadline to get some assets back in return. Let's just say hypothetically that happens. Do you think the Suns should go on that to pair Kawhi next to Booker? Because I feel like those guys together are really almost like the perfect fit as far as offense defense goes.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi and anybody, there's literally all 29 teams should be knocking at the Spurs door, if there's even an inkling of a report that situation has gotten bad enough where the Spurs are thinking about moving on. You did point out to me, which I didn't know, reading the report didn't occur to me, that his contract is up after next season. So that does add like a small wrinkle to the story, just considering that there's a more of an accelerated timeline for, you know, if he doesn't really ever get fully recovered this year, let's say, or he does, but it's he's not in full strength, and now you're down to one last season for both his health and for whatever, how the relationship has frayed, for it to be mended. And that does change things a little bit, but I agree with you that obviously the Suns would be over the moon. They'll trade whatever. I think Kawhi is like a top four player in the league, probably. Any team should trade for that type of guy.
Totally, yeah, I agree with you there. And with his contract, it does make it a little bit intriguing as far as that goes, because he does have a player option. And if he does decide that San Antonio isn't the place, then that will be pretty interesting, because now I feel like this makes San Antonio a really interesting place to watch over the next 10 or so months, because now this summer, I think they have to be on the LeBron James sweepstakes if they want to be a win-now contender with how that roster's set up. I mean, don't you agree? Because outside DeJounte Murray and the aging LaMarcus Aldridge, you have fledgling pieces like Kyle Anderson and Danny Green. If you're looking from that, from Kawhi's standpoint, what is there for me to win titles in San Antonio? I mean, I think that's a fair question to ask.
I think, I don't know. I think that from what that piece said today, it seems more like the frustration is purely with the recovery process from the injury and maybe mixed signals he's getting. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you have in San Antonio to win is the best coach in the history of basketball, potentially, and a team that's won 5 titles in 20 years. Like, that's a better situation, regardless of, I mean, it's almost like a testament to how good of a situation that is, that he has teammates like that and still has been able to find the success that he's had. Like, there's better situations maybe talent-wise in the league, although, you know, even then, I'm not too sure that that's true. But you're to leave San Antonio, that's what I think it's just hard to imagine, is like, that's the situation players should, I mean, they were on Kyrie's list. Like, that's the kind of player, that's the kind of situation that players leave their bad situations to go be a part of. And, you know, especially a situation like the one in Phoenix does not scream to me as something that one would desire more than the Spurs. But I know you're not, like, trying to make the argument for it. You're just, it is, I mean, that's what probably all the front offices in the league are. They never would have thought it a week ago, but now maybe there's at least some little inkling of potential there. And it's obviously, if a player like that becomes available, it's the biggest story in the league.
Definitely. I'm going to segue this into a two-part question for you, because I feel like I know the answer to the first part. And I think I would obviously do this as well, because I'm proposing it. But let's say draft night, the Suns do have like the number 5 pick, and this situation all of a sudden boils over. And let's say the Spurs offer Kawhi for Josh Jackson, Marquise Chris, the 2021 Miami pick, and the 2019 Suns first, or 2020 Suns first round pick. You'd obviously, I think you'd do that, right? Because I would, obviously.
Yeah, I think you'd honestly, I don't think you trade Booker, because then you're kind of in a similar position. You just kind of upgraded your best player and lost a bunch of assets. That's not really ideal, but anybody but Booker, I think, and any pick I would trade. I can't imagine. You don't really hold anything back in that kind of, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and to that point, I'm going to segue this back to the Milwaukee game just for our final points on this podcast tonight. And that's with Jason Kidd. He was fired today. We haven't touched on that yet. He was let go after, I believe, 2.5 years on the job in Milwaukee, or 3.5 years with Milwaukee. He really helped Giannis develop into his all-around player. And from Chris Haynes' report today, he said, quote-unquote, Giannis was devastated with the news of him being fired. So just what's the situation you're going to read off of that with Milwaukee and Jason Kidd? Because I feel like now with another team needing a head coach, that's another team in the David Fizdale or whoever the top head coaches are, sweepstakes. I feel like now, unless Jeff Hornacek gets fired in New York, I think Milwaukee is the number one coaching job in the NBA.
I think even if – Hornacek gets fired in Milwaukee, I mean, there's not a lot of better. Maybe if Ty Lue gets fired, but even then, that's a disaster of a situation. I can't think of many places where there's more potential and less problems right now than Milwaukee. The opportunity to coach Giannis through his prime after signing a new extension, the talent that they have there, with a lot of it still not even fully developed. I mean, this is their team is a playoff team, and Giannis is putting up MVP caliber numbers without Jabari Parker in the lineup. That's an entire, you know, potentially all-star level player that's not even been in the lineup this year. So I think that they jump over the Suns now as the top destination for any potential coach. But I think the good thing about this year is there's been a lot more rumors, it seems like, this year of guys who have been out of coaching for a little while coming back in. Jeff Van Gundy, Monty Williams, those names have been coming up more. I don't know if that's actually because there's real legs to those rumors, or maybe it's just people are getting more antsy for those guys to come back. But I think that, you know, there's not like one top guy. It's not like a Tom Thibodeau where whoever gets him is going to clearly kind of win that situation. So even though Milwaukee's a much more appealing situation with a better star player in place, I think that, you know, even if Fizdale goes there, there's several other guys that would be fine having as the Suns coach, including, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but they have a guy in place right now who's not doing too bad of a job. So I think they're in a much better coaching position looking back now than they were at the beginning of the year. We can just kind of leave it there.
Yeah, with the coaches, I think there's definitely going to be at least a few more firings. If I had to guess, I think this is definitely looking ahead, but I think Hornacek, Tyronn Lue, Steve Clifford in Charlotte, those are a few more names to keep an eye on as far as coaching candidates go, and those are smaller markets, obviously, outside of New York. But how does Phoenix, I know you had them, you said second now behind Milwaukee, with possibly about 5 to 8 openings this offseason, how competitive is this coaching race going to be for guys? Because I know you said there's not a top candidate, but what should the Suns be looking for? We touched on this a little bit, probably a month or so ago on the podcast, but outside of Jay Triano, what is the ideal candidate for this, for the Suns to really push this core into their prime?
I don't know if I have a specific name anymore, just because it feels so, it's just kind of like dreaming at a certain point when you just start throwing names around. I think Triano's done a much better job than I would have expected, and I kind of lean to him maybe as the favorite at this point, not because obviously I'm not talking to anybody, that's not like I'm reporting or anything close to that. I just think I prefer him at this point over a lot of the unknowns, and while I think a lot of those guys like the Van Gundys, Williams, Mark Jacksons could be good for a young team like the Suns, they've all been out of coaching for a while, and in bringing them back in is not a sure thing that it's going to go well, especially if you were to bring a guy like that back into a losing situation, which the Suns probably still will be next season, or, you know, they're not going to be competing for a title, definitely. So that's where I would be hesitant to go out and snag a crazy expensive or renowned guy and then try to make him happy coaching a team that's going to be competing for the very best, like a 500 record next year.
Yeah, I also agree with you there, because this roster needs a person that's going to help develop them moving forward, not exactly in the ways that Earl Watson did, obviously, but someone that's going to hold them accountable, really a mixture of a lot of these guys on the market. I think another name that's going to be really interesting to look forward to is Luke Walton in LA. I doubt he gets let go, but if for some reason that Lonzo Ball situation untangles again, I think he's a guy that's going to be really interesting to watch as far as candidates go. But anything as far as this podcast tonight goes, Brendan, we didn't touch on anything you wanted to a little before we let you go?
No, I would just say we'll probably hit it if we do an episode tomorrow or Wednesday after the Pacers game. But tomorrow night during the TNT broadcast, they'll be announcing the All-Star Reserve. So I'm kind of past the point of thinking that there's much hope for Devin Booker, but he did finish 9th in the final results, including 4th among Western Conference guards in player rank. getting the fourth most votes from players in the league, and if it was just based on that, he would have a decent shot in one of those two wild card spots for the reserves. But as it stands now, it seems pretty unlikely that he'll get in, but it'll be something to talk about on Wednesday.
Yeah, I saw USA Today, Jeff Zilga and Sam Amick, they had a preview for the Western Conference, and they had easily guys in like Clay, which surprised me, which we both think that Booker should be in over guys like Clay, but I think it's really the win-loss record's going to really hurt him, because I saw guys such as Lou Williams and other guys, because Devin Booker in their list didn't even get any consideration as far as other names to watch. So
yeah, I've been doing that. I've been listening to podcasts and reading stuff, and there's entire pieces where nobody's even mentioning Booker, and that's kind of why I'm like, okay, well, we can dream, but it's not going to happen. I do think, I mean, he can hang his hat on a fourth ranking of Western guards in the playoff. I mean, that's basically, I mean, it went 1-2-3 Curry, Harden, Westbrook. That's obvious, but he was the next guy after that group in the conference that includes Clay, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler. So you know, he's on his way. I think this year, in his third year, to not be an all-star, it's frustrating with the performance he's had, but you know, he's on his way to being a many-time all-star if he continues this kind of crazy trajectory he's had. So but it'd be interesting to look at, because somebody's going to get in that maybe is a little bit controversial or not necessarily unanimous. So we'll definitely hit on it on Wednesday, but that'll probably be after the game.
Yeah, if we don't talk to you guys tomorrow, we'll obviously talk to you after the game on Wednesday. They will be in Indiana, so it will be a definitely interesting game to look forward to. The last time these two teams played, Indiana won in a rout, so we'll see if this time around the Suns make it competitive. But until then, we'll talk to you guys soon.